The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up, from the summer edition of Diabetes Self-Management, Extinguishing Diabetes Burnout. Discover ways to turn down the heat from diabetes by preventing and managing signs of burnout. Article by Julia Wynn, W-Y-N-N. Anyone with diabetes can relate to the stress of dealing with the unrelenting daily demands of self-management. Deciding what and when to eat, measuring blood glucose, fitting in exercise, scheduling medications, you live your life to the drumbeat of these routines. You devote significant mental energy to keeping diabetes in check every hour of the day, and for many it can lead to diabetes burnout. Diabetes burnout, also known as diabetes distress, is when worry, frustration, and anger become overwhelming and make it difficult for people to take care of their diabetes, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC. More than half of U.S. adults with diabetes fail to meet recommended targets, concluded a decades-long report evaluating diabetes management. Higher distress levels are connected to elevated glucose levels and lower quality of life, according to a study in the journal Diabetes Care. Preventing burnout. Diabetes is demanding, but it can be managed with the right support and attitude, says Jane K. Dickinson, RN, PhD, CDCES, Program Director. Diabetes Education and Management at the Teachers College of Columbia University in New York. Keeping a positive attitude and having a sense of humor are great ways to prevent burnout. Surrounding yourself with a healthcare team who will educate, guide, and support you can make all the difference as well, adds Dickinson. Make sure it's a good fit with your providers so they understand what's important to you and what's working and not working. It is also important to monitor the emotional side of diabetes. There's an emotional impact from dealing with a chronic condition that can lead to frustration, negative feelings, and sometimes depression. These feelings can fluctuate over time, says Debbie Butler, MSW, LICSW, CDCES, Director of the Behavioral Health Unit at Harvard's Joslin Diabetes Center in Boston. Diabetes burnout can affect all aspects of your life and can lead to feelings of depression. Signs of smoke. If you're feeling frustrated and overwhelmed, your healthcare team may ask you to complete questionnaires to check your levels of distress. A two-question test called the Diabetes Distress Scale, DDS-2, asks respondents to rate on a 6-point scale the degree to which the following items cause distress: feeling overwhelmed by the demands of living with diabetes, and feeling that they are often failing with their diabetes plan. A more extensive questionnaire, DDS-17, may further identify stress points with intervention solutions. Accept burnout. If you start experiencing burnout, accept that it happens to nearly everyone living with diabetes. Acknowledging that you're tired of managing diabetes 24/7 is an important step, says Vieira. The monitoring, carb counting, and testing never ends. So of course you're going to feel burnt out. And that's okay because diabetes burnout is so common. Set realistic goals. There's no such thing as the perfect plan for diabetes self-management. It is very hard to stay in target glucose range all the time, so it's important to set achievable goals, says Butler. If managing diabetes didn't go well in the morning, then regroup and try again in the afternoon or the next day, adds Butler. Also, avoid referring to yourself as a bad diabetic. Those types of labels can lead to low self-esteem and contribute to burnout, explains Dickinson. The same goes for describing glucose levels as bad or good. Instead, use factual descriptions such as high or low. Find support. Connecting with others living with diabetes who understand the daily struggles can help avoid feelings of isolation. I'm talking to people with diabetes all day long, mostly over email and in support groups, and it helps, says Vieira. Many national diabetes organizations, along with many local medical centers, offer local in-person support groups. If you prefer online support networks due to COVID-19, you can choose from the various resources listed in the sidebar. Reading the sidebar now, Avoiding Burnout, Connect with Others. These resources can help you find the support you need to prevent or manage diabetes distress. American Diabetes Association. Click on diabetes.org/get-involved/community to find events and support groups in your area. Beyond Type 1 app. Connect with an online community of over 25,000 participants interested in sharing their experiences with type 1 diabetes. Beyond Type 2 app, developed by the same group as Beyond Type 1, but specifically for the type 2 community. DiabetesSisters.org, in-person and online opportunities for women ages 18 and older living with any type of diabetes, including pre-diabetes. Check out DiabetesSisters.org/pods-meetups for more information. Facebook. A quick search on Facebook for diabetes support groups leads to dozens of both public and private groups with thousands of members focused on supporting the diabetes community. Inspire.com. This popular online community includes forums for people with pre-diabetes type 1 and type 2. JDRF offers a range of online groups for kids and adults dealing with type 1 at forum.jdrf.org. PatientsLikeMe.com maintains a type 1 support forum of more than 11,000 members and a type 2 support forum of more than 43,000 members. Resuming and finishing the article, take a short break. According to the Association of Diabetes Care and Education Specialists, ADCES, if you are worn out by daily tasks and a feeling of failure, give yourself a reasonable break from the routine. Vera refers to it as a diabetes vacation. She is the first to advise that this break should not result with you ending up in the hospital. It's not about ignoring your diabetes, but spending a little less time obsessing about your sugar and your diet, she says. A break could mean slightly relaxing your target glucose levels, lowering your diet expectations, or scaling back your exercise program. Talk to your healthcare team about this first to ensure you're making safe choices for yourself, says Vieira. From AARP, the magazine, for October-November 23, Breakthroughs in Diabetes, a Continuous Glucose Monitoring Revolution. Diagnosed with type 2 diabetes in 2004, Andy Pincus has made some radical changes. He's lost 52 pounds, walks more than 15,000 steps a day, and eats a more plant-based diet. But earlier this year, Medicare expanded coverage for continuous glucose monitors, CGM, making it significantly easier for Pincus, 70, and millions of others to manage their blood sugar levels. Once used mostly for insulin-dependent type 1 diabetes, CGM use is rising fastest in people like Pincus with type 2, who typically take oral medications and may use injectable drugs, sometimes along with insulin, to control blood sugar. To better manage his diabetes, Pincus wears a patch with a glucose sensor on his upper arm that transmits blood sugar, glucose, data to his smartphone. I take readings several times during the day. When I see spikes and valleys, I think about what I ate that caused that. I've lost weight and my A1C, a 90-day blood sugar average, is lower. Experts estimate that Medicare rule change makes 1.5 million more older adults eligible for the devices, many with type 2. If private insurance plans follow suit, another 2.5 million people, almost all with type 2, will have insurance coverage. The change is one reason analysts say by 2027, at least 5.9 million people with type 2 diabetes will be eligible for insurance-covered CGMs. That could grow to 8.4 million if private insurers also expand coverage. This is great news for patients with type 2 diabetes, says Tamara Oser, MD, who studies CGM devices at the University of Colorado and Schutz Medical Campus in Aurora. Compared to fingerstick blood sugar checks, CGM devices help midlife and older adults lower their blood sugar further and keep it in a healthy range longer. Oser's recent pilot study that used CGM with a lifestyle guide and Fitbit 67% of newly diagnosed type 2 patients obtain diabetes remission. OSER is also testing CGM in pre-diabetes, which almost 64 million midlife and older Americans have. Meanwhile, Pincus has used his CGM to see how certain foods, as well as sleep and stress, affect his glucose levels. CGM has the ability to change lives, he says. More diabetes breakthroughs. App helps you stay on track. A prescription-only smartphone app, which uses cognitive behavioral therapy techniques to help people with diabetes develop new habits, received FDA authorization in July. People using the AspyreRx, that's A-S-P-Y-R-E-R-X, for 90 days saw their A1C, a measure of long-term blood sugar control, fall significantly. Diabetes drug sparks weight loss. In May 2022, the FDA approved tirzepatide, Mounjaro, an injectable diabetes medication that activates receptors on cells for glucose-controlling hormones. The drug also helps with weight loss. After approval, some dosages were in short supply, as people with and without diabetes flocked to fill prescriptions. On the horizon, artificial pancreas for type 2 diabetes. In January 2023, a small British study showed that an experimental artificial pancreas, a device that measures blood sugar continually and releases insulin into the bloodstream as needed, was more successful at lowering blood sugar than standard insulin injections for adults with advanced type 2 diabetes. Researchers say larger studies are needed to fully test the device. Drug-free help for diabetic nerve pain. Early in 2023, the FDA approved the use of Eterna, Proclaim Plus, and Proclaim XR spinal cord stimulation, SCS, systems to relieve lower extremity pain caused by diabetic peripheral neuropathy, DPN. The devices send mild electrical signals to the spinal cord, reducing pain by an average of 53% in studies. With Thanksgiving behind us and other holidays upcoming, here's a short article from AARP, the magazine of October-November 2022. You'll always be my baby. How to cope when old family dynamics disrupt holiday visits. When everyone packs into grandma's house for the holidays, no matter their age, family members often fall or get dragged into their old childhood roles. Even adults who now have kids of their own and successful careers can be made to feel like children again. And that can create conflict. Here's how to survive your holiday get-together, according to family therapists. Tips for adult children. Set boundaries. Before getting together, tell parents, siblings, or other attendees of any off-limit topics, such as politics or stories from your childhood. Prepare for the weird. Visualize how you wish to react if treated inappropriately. Is it best to respond with humor, with sternness, or by doing a breathing exercise? Designate a support person. Arrange to have a friend available to talk by phone when you need a break from your family, says Mudita Rastogi, a clinical professor and licensed marriage and family therapist. Tips for parents. Discuss ahead of time. Before the kids and their families come home for the holidays, talk to each of them about what they're hoping to get out of the visit and their preferences around the agenda, Rastogi says. Don't keep them down. People grow and change, even your own babies. Keep an open mind and get to know them as adults rather than focusing on who they were as children. Schedule time apart. Group activities are a recipe for conflict, Rastogi says. Arrange to meet one-on-one with family members to create space for quiet time. Article by Kelsey Ogletree. From the November 2023 issue of the AARP Bulletin, companies start to step up. Businesses recognize that caregiving benefits are needed. Article by Andrea King Collier. More than 60% of caregivers work full or part-time jobs, making the average of 18 hours they spend per week on caregiving particularly challenging. Yet if they need time off to tend to the needs of a loved one, their choices typically are few. Take vacation days, sick days, or unpaid leave. That is starting to change. A rising number of employers offer caregiving benefits as a way to attract and retain quality employees. My employer allows me to work remotely and have flexible hours to care for my soon-to-be 97-year-old mother, who lives alone in Birmingham, says Gerta Perkins, 66, a senior regulatory analyst based in Indianapolis. Her mother has severe arthritis in her spine and knees and is under pain management. I think that flexibility I have is why I am still working and haven't retired. According to the Society for Human Resource Management, caregiving-friendly companies are offering benefits that include more work-from-home opportunities and the ability to transition to part-time work or work-sharing, in which two employees split what would be a full-time position. Some go beyond that. We have some employer clients who are starting to get creative in the way they try to support employee caregivers, says Claudia Fine, Chief Professional Officer at eFamily Care, a telemedicine company. Examples include connecting family caregivers with in-home respite care and providing care advice and referrals to community resources. Fannie Mae, a mortgage financing company, instituted a program that offers up to 12 weeks of paid employee leave to care for a seriously ill family member. It also provides elder care consultants. Changing expectations. The COVID-19 pandemic sparked a revolution in workplace expectations, and some companies have discovered that employees who are family caregivers suffer from mental health challenges that can impact their job performance. The demands on employees to balance work and family commitments are more intense than ever before, says Denise King, Vice President of Global Benefits and Payroll for Medtronic, a health technology company. Her company offers caregivers mental health support and paid time off up to 6 weeks every 24 months. Medtronic also started providing support through Wellthy, W-E-L-L-T-H-Y, a third-party care concierge. Employees are matched with a dedicated care coordinator who can help manage care in any capacity, big or small, King says. That can include assistance hiring income care, understanding Medicare benefits, home modifications, meal delivery, transportation, and end-of-life support. Advocates encourage more companies to treat family caregivers with the same respect as they give to parents of young children. We talk a lot about cradle to grave, says Karen Cavanaugh, Chief of Strategic Initiatives at the Rosalind Carter Institute for Caregivers. But right now, it's mostly the cradle. Also from the November 23 AARP Bulletin, from an article about communities who have won AARP grants, there's a couple of paragraphs about improving accessibility. As the state officially celebrates 2023 as the North Carolina Year of the Trail, other AARP projects are also focusing on pathways. The town of Matthews, located southeast of Charlotte, is using its $5,500 grant to install a mural, lighting, benches, and signs along a pedestrian and bike trail to commemorate the Crestdale community, one of the state's oldest African-American neighborhoods. The nonprofit Sustain Charlotte received $15,700 grant to engage older adult volunteers in creating an accessibility map of Mecklenburg County's extensive greenway system. The map will include the location of restrooms, water fountains, and benches, as well as information about greenway sections that are particularly steep or that would be hard to traverse with a wheelchair, says Meg Fensill, Sustain Charlotte's Director of Engagement and Impact. If a part of a community, whether it's greenways or bike lanes, works for older adults, it's probably also going to work well for younger kids and parents with children and people with disabilities, Fensill says. The other AARP grantees are Carolina Cross Connection in Banner Elk, made home repairs and modifications for older residents so they can age in place. El Centro in Brevard expanded a community garden for Hispanic families by adding a 50-foot by 50-foot patch of tilled rose and offered cooking, exercise, and gardening classes. Age-friendly Forsyth in Forsyth County will train 100 volunteer aging services ambassadors to provide information about local services for older adults. The town of Chapel Hill will install LED lighting, signs, and safety islands with garden beds on local streets to make them safer for pedestrians. To learn more, go to aarp.org/community-challenge. From Cornell University, we have an article about glasses use sonar and AI to interpret upper body poses in 3D. by Louis DiPietro Cornell, N.S. Bowers College of Computing and Information Science, dateline November 9th. Facebook, Twitter, email, share. Throughout history, sonar's distinctive ping has been used to map oceans, spot enemy submarines, and find sunken ships. Today, a variation of that technology in miniature form, developed by Cornell researchers, is proving a game-changer in wearable body sensing technology. PoseSonic is the latest sonar-equipped wearable from Cornell's Smart Computer Interfaces for Future Interactions Sci-Fi Lab. It consists of off-the-shelf eyeglasses outfitted with micro-sonar that can track the wearer's upper body movements in 3D through a combination of inaudible sound waves and artificial intelligence, AI. With further development, PoseSonic could enhance augmented reality and virtual reality and track detailed physical and behavioral data for personal health, the researchers said. What's exciting to me about PoseSonic is the potential for its use in detecting fine-grained human activities in the wild, said Saif Mahmoud, a doctoral student in the field of information science. When we have lots of data through body-sensing technology like PoseSonic, it can help us be more mindful of ourselves and our behaviors. Mahmoud is the lead author of PoseSonic, 3D Upper Body Pose Estimation Through Egocentric Acoustic Sensing on Smart Glasses, which was presented October 10th at the Joint Pervasive and Ubiquitous Computing, UbiComp, and International Symposium on Wearable Computing, ISWC, conference in Cancun, Mexico. We're the first research group using inaudible acoustics and AI to track body poses through a wearable device, said senior author Cheng Zhang, assistant professor of information science in the Cornell N.S. Bowers College of Computing and Information Science, and director of the Sci-Fi Lab. By integrating cutting-edge AI into low-power, low-cost, and privacy-conscious acoustic sensing systems, we use less instrumentation on the body, which is more practical, and battery performance is significantly better for everyday use. PoseSonic has two pairs of tiny microphones and speakers, each about the diameter of a pencil, attached to the hinges of eyeglasses. The speakers emit inaudible sound waves that bounce off the upper body and back up to the microphones, generating an echo profile image. This image is then fed into the PoseSonic's machine learning algorithm, which estimates the body pose with near-perfect accuracy. And unlike other data-driven wearable pose tracking systems, PoseSonic functions well without an initial training session with the user, the researchers said. The system can estimate body movements made at 9 body joints, including the shoulders, elbows, wrists, hips, and nose, which is useful to estimate head positioning, researchers said. The technology is a major step up from existing wearable devices that often require a mini video camera, which isn't always practical. Current wearables with video cameras also require significant battery power and pose privacy concerns, the researchers said. Acoustic sensing requires minimal power, 10 times less than a wearable camera. Because of this, the technology makes for a much smaller and unobtrusive wearable, researchers said. Further, they added, there's much less privacy risk with sonar. A wearable video camera poses privacy risks for anyone in the wearer's vicinity, Mahmoud said. Our solution, let's put a little inaudible acoustic field around us that can track our body's movement while also respecting other people's privacy. PoseSonic is one of 3 sonar-equipped wearable devices from the Sci-Fi Lab that members presented at UbiComp/ISWC this fall. Echo Nose is a sensor that attaches to eyeglasses that emits inaudible acoustic signals into the nasal and oral cavities to read mouth, breathing, and tongue gestures. HPS Speech expands on the Sci-Fi Lab's study of silent speech by transforming off-the-shelf headphones into a silent speech reader. Think of mouthing the words volume up to adjust music volume on a nearby smartphone. HPS Speech received an honorable mention award. The lab's 4th UbiComp/ISWC device and paper, called C-Off, is a user authentication method for smart glasses that uses a mini camera to read the wearer's facial contours. along with Mahmoud and Shang. Co-authors Poe Sonic are Kei Li and Ridong Zhang, doctoral students in the field of information science. Guilin Hu, 24, Hao Shen, 24, Richard Jin, 24, and Francois Grimbretier, professor of information science in Cornell Bowers, CIS. This research is supported by the National Science Foundation. Louis DiPietro is a writer for the Cornell Ann S. Bowers College of Computing and Information Science. From WhiteHouse.gov, a proclamation on Blind Americans Equality Day for 2023, Dateline, October 13th. On Blind Americans Equality Day, my administration celebrates the contributions that people who are blind or low vision have made to our country, and we recommit to creating a more accessible nation where everyone has the opportunity to realize their full potential. More than 33 years ago, the United States Congress passed the Americans with Disabilities Act, a landmark civil rights law that banned discrimination against people with disabilities in many areas of public life. I was proud to co-sponsor that historic bill as a United States Senator, and I am proud of its lasting impact today. Despite the progress we have made, we have more work to do to uphold the rights of Americans with visual disabilities. Less than half of blind or low vision Americans are employed. Public services, including online resources, are often designed in ways that make them inaccessible to this community. These are but a few of the many obstacles blind and low vision Americans still face. As president, I have made it a priority to end discrimination, increase independence, and expand opportunity for everyone, including Americans who are blind or low vision. Soon after taking office, I issued an executive order to establish a government-wide policy of diversity, equity, inclusion, and accessibility in the workplace to promote fairness in the labor market for Americans with disabilities. This executive order directs agencies to find and remove barriers to hiring and promotion for job applicants and employees who are disabled. Further, my administration ended the practice of paying people employed through the Ability One Commission, which creates opportunities for people who are blind or have significant disabilities, less than minimum wage. I have also named the first ever White House Disability Policy Director, whose team is working every day to defend and advance the rights of Americans with disabilities. I award Jose Feliciano the National Medal of Arts, recognizing his immense contributions as a guitarist and pioneering artist who has bridged cultures and styles, won Grammy Awards, and opened doors for generations of Latino artists and the heart of our nation. My administration has also taken steps to increase the accessibility for blind and low vision Americans. Through the bipartisan infrastructure law, we are reducing the barriers that blind Americans face in their daily lives by investing $1.75 billion to improve the accessibility of transit stations across America. Under my direction, the Department of Transportation is working to expand access to transportation for people with disabilities. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice has proposed a new rule that would make state and local governments' web and mobile apps more accessible, enabling those who are blind or low vision to access critical online resources. Additionally, the National Institutes of Health designated people with disabilities as a population with health disparities, which will encourage research specific to the health issues and unmet health needs for blind and low vision Americans. I am also proud to have secured billions of dollars to expand educational opportunities for students with disabilities. I've run out of time for this week's episode of Vision News. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, NC Reading Service.